It's a Friday, and let's visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And our visits with Ben are brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group, great alternative to surgery. The doctors of Bays, Wolf, and Crane at Blue Tail Medical Group. Before you have surgery, talk to them, because they're going to tell you that your body has a chance to heal itself before surgery. And there are doctors all over the world that are coming into Chesterfield to visit with them to find out how they're doing it. So do yourself a favor and make sure you check out BlueTailMedicalGroup.com. Well, Ben Fredrickson, how would you surmise last night's game and sweep by the Braves against St. Louis? That was an ugly, ugly loss, wasn't it? And good morning. I should say good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah. And it was a bad loss. I think probably the worst of the season in terms of the one that got away loss, but also a bad series. I mean, look, you go into that series, the first one out of the trade deadline, Dan, and you're trying to find reasons to believe, right? You're looking for that run that has eluded the Cardinals. And if you're the Braves, you leave St. Louis feeling like you're on top of the world. You're above 500. The new outfielders you got after Acuna went down are playing well. And you look at that wide open division and you say, hey, we can do this. The Cardinals have to be thinking all of the opposite thoughts after that sweep. And to have a game like that get away from you is hard. And, you know, the frustrating thing about it, you kind of had a chance to not salvage the series, but to enter some more manageable series against even worse teams on a little bit of a high note. And instead it turns into a bottomed out loss, because two of the guys that have been the most reliable guys on this team all year get bit. And that's a tough way to have it go. But, you know, they also couldn't score enough runs. And we've seen some problems from this team. It just doesn't look like a team, Dan, that is ready to make that run. The eye test is not looking good for these guys. And, you know, I know the Cardinals are not one to say the season is over before it mathematically is proven to be over. And they're not used to playing games that don't count. And they're not yet, but they're awfully close to being forced to have to start thinking about prioritizing 2022 over 2021 here.
Yeah. And you mentioned the two guys that you've been relying on so much, Giovanni Gallegos and Alex Reyes. Gallegos now 12 earned in his last 14 a third innings pitched, his 15 appearances since the start of July. Alex Reyes, 9 earned in 9 innings in his last 11. So those are the guys you're counting on. Let's go back to the 8th inning and how that unfolded. Gallegos got the first two, then he ran into problems with the home run, gives up a double, and the Cardinals turned to Alex Reyes. And the wheels came off for Alex and the Cardinals. I was just a little surprised that he left him in as long as he did. I didn't have a problem with the move of going with Gallegos. And after all, everything transpired, you got to go to Reyes. They have been your guys, and it didn't work out. So I'm curious what you thought the 8th inning and how it all unfolded with all the walks.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some caution lights for both of these guys here lately. However, there's not anyone who screams out to be a better answer. You know, if those who were saying Schilt should have gone to someone else, then would have been saying, you know, he went to the wrong guy if he didn't go to those two. And Gallegos had not gone back to back in a while. So I didn't have a problem there. I do think a case can be made that maybe Andrew Miller might have been worth a look in that scenario before things got to Reyes. You know, he's pitched quite a bit better since he's come back from his injury, but it doesn't seem like he's in the spot where Schilt really trusts him to be, you know, the Andrew Miller of old, and maybe he should be trusting him a little bit more. I'm with you on Reyes. I think you could have had him out sooner. He certainly should have had guys warming up sooner. The one thing about Alex, and he's been so good this season in the deserving All-Star, but the one thing that he's been a little bit less sharp when he's not pitching in a save situation. It's not remarkably so, but it is worth kind of having your radar up a little bit when it's not a save on the line. And it wasn't last night. And I think that kind of is worth maybe, you know, saying, okay, we're going to get him up, but get somebody up behind him. And without him looking over his shoulder, and, you know, there is the 3-batter minimum. So you got to keep that into account when you can't just yank him when he first comes in. But I do think as soon as you can in that scenario, you got to try to get him out before the wheels fall off. I also think Schilt is kind of the mindset where, those are his two most reliable guys in the bullpen. And I think if he feels like he's going to go down, he's going to go down swinging with those guys. And to some degree, I kind of understand that logic too.
The other thing that I think about when I mentioned this on the broadcast last night, and we'll have all three games on television this weekend locally. Alex Reyes wants to be a starter next year, and I'm all for it, and I get it, and that's what he wants to do, and that's where, you know, it's his career, and I'm sure he's yearning for that chance to start. The problem is going to be is if he continues with this walk rate, he's only going to last three or four innings as a starter. So I don't know if that is maybe the best thing for him until you see improvement with the walks. Now, that may happen because you're not as max effort as a starter, which then you're taking off a little bit, maybe to get more location, that kind of thing. I think there's a case to be made for that. But that's something to keep in mind is that if he wants to start, the walks have got to stop, Ben.
Absolutely. And I wonder, too, does his philosophy change a little bit? It's so hard to be a closer mentality and then know what that would look like if that guy's asked to do something different as a starter. I think there probably would be a bit of a mentality shift there. I still want to see it. I want to see him get the shot because, you know, especially the Cardinals have twisted themselves in knots for seasons, plural now, convincing themselves to continue to give Carlos Martinez his chances to prove he's a starter when we've seen all kinds of signs that he's not anymore. And they've not once twisted themselves in knots trying to prove to themselves that Alex Reyes can be a starter. They talk themselves out of it at every turn. And a lot of them have been health related, but this year they did it. And, you know, you wonder maybe what would this season have looked like if at spring training they said, okay, he's going to be this many innings. We're not going to let him pitch more than X, Y, and Z, but we're going to try to let him get in the field for being in the rotation. I do wonder, and I hope they don't talk themselves out of that again, but you're absolutely right. The walks for him, they get overlooked a little bit because that's a pretty pass-fail job. You know, if you walk the bases loaded and you get out of the inning and you get the save, then everybody kind of moves on, and that's how it should be for that job. But that's not a pass. Starting is not a pass-fail job, and if he's putting bodies on bases like he has, that's a problem, and that's been a huge problem for this team this season, and Alex is a part of that. John Gant is a big part of that. He's gone now, and some of the other, you know, Oviedo was a big part of that. He's down in the minors now, but Reyes has not fixed it, and it has caused problems. You seem to know with him when he's kind of starting to, you know, delay, it seems like, when he's changing the signs a bunch, when he's going to that card a bunch. Just to me, that's a sign that he's not aggressive. He's not as confident in his stuff as he should be. And it seems to me like when that's happening, you know, it's not so much that he thinks he's going to get hit because people have a hard time hitting him. It's that he's having a hard time finding the zone. And as he started to do that last night, you kind of had a feeling for when it was going. And then this team has walked so many guys, Dan, that I do think it's kind of cumulative. I think it's kind of a mental thing. And Kisner talked about that after the game. He said, look, he goes, we have these guys who want so much to be great, and they're trying so hard that sometimes it becomes almost a negative. And I kind of understand that, but look, it's the job of the coaching. It's the job of the players to get past that. And they have not figured out a way to stomp out this problem. And I think that becomes a question for Mike Maddox. I know that they haven't always had the talent they want in the rotation or the bullpen, and you got more proven guys. They walk fewer guys. That's understandable. But something about, you know, these guys are talented enough to be in the majors, yet they can't seem to get over this bugaboo of walking these guys. And I think at some point that's fair to say, at what point is a coach supposed to come in and help fix that, help stop that?
So let's turn the page a little bit. And now Mike Matheny returns to Busch Stadium. By the way, first time with fans in attendance after last year's visit. And, of course, he managed the Cardinals from 2012 to 2018. The Royals are 47-60, and the Cardinals now two games below 500. And St. Louis, a season-high 11.5 back in the Central. Now, they're going to go to Adam Wainwright tonight. I'm going to give you some stats that are just mind-boggling for me. He's going to be 40 later this month. So he's got 132/3 innings this year. That's fifth in the major leagues, okay? They have won, the Cardinals have, 8 of his last 10 starts. Waino himself is 6-1. He has thrown at least 7 innings in 11 games, and that's amazing too. He's looking to throw 7 or more innings for the fourth consecutive start for the first time since September of 2014. It's does that just blow you away, some of those stats? But that's one of the questions I have for you. But the other thing is, Yachty has made overtures. He wants to come back. Waino has said to Ken Rosenthal, it's either this year or next year, but then I'm done. And I know fans are curious about this as we start to look towards the end of the tunnel here of this season about Yachty and Waino coming back. What are your thoughts on that?
Bring them back. One more year for both if they want it. No need to let them sit around and be free agents. If they'll agree to similar deals, then lock it up and get it done and thank them for their security, hope for their health. And you know, look, I get it if you want to wait till the end of the year just to make sure there's not more injuries that come into play. Understand that. I know Yachty wants the deal yesterday, right? But here's the deal. He's not going anywhere else, I don't think. I don't think any team values him like the Cardinals would. And I think this is going to be where these guys play if they play. And the Cardinals know that. I think these guys know it. So if the Cardinals want to kind of hold off and make sure that both of these guys get through the season healthy, that would probably be wise. But I don't see why it would need to go on months and months into the offseason like it did last season. Yachty, you got to look at the offense, what he's been able to provide when he's healthy. I know that a lot of folks want to see Kisner play more, and I think that's a fair thing to hope for. Do I think it's going to happen? No, I don't. You know, the organization has already kind of said, I mean, Mozeliak has said recently that they kind of view Herrera is the catcher of the future. I think they expect Yachty to kind of pass that baton. So what becomes of Kisner is a fascinating question. Is he the big trade chip this offseason? He helped himself with a big home run in last night's game. But to me, they see Herrera as the guy and Yachty's the bridge to get there. So bring him back one more year. He's not going anywhere else. And with Wainwright, hell, he's been your best starter for the past two seasons. I don't know what you see that suggests that that's all of a sudden going to change. Who cares what the velocity is? He knows what he's doing. He's got a feel for his stuff. He's confident. He's one of the Cardinals' few starters who have done a great job this season of using the defense behind him, of letting that defense play. I thought it was really, really, you know, telling last night that after that awful inning unravels on the Cardinals, Edmundo Sosa makes a spectacular play to end it. Another reminder that just let this defense do its job. But in order to do that, you got to throw strikes, and Waino's doing it. So on top of their performance, I think if they're healthy, you get worlds of benefit from their leadership, from their example. And they do a good job selling tickets too, which you can't completely overlook. So I'd be totally up for one more year for both.
You mentioned Edmundo Sosa. So we're trying to figure out, you know, you're staying in the moment of the wild card and trying to get there, obviously, in 2021. You got the Royals in here. Then you're going to go to Pittsburgh and Kansas City. So, again, we're saying it's a softer point in the schedule, and maybe teams are looking at the Cardinals as being a softer point of the schedule.
No kidding.
So, you know, whatever. But where are you at with DeJong? Where are you at with Sosa? You know, if you're trying to win games this year, you know, Paulie is just – it's been a tough year for him. Where are you in, when you look at that and going down the stretch of evaluating – both guys, and then also trying to keep in mind that you're winning games for this year.
Yeah, they got to find their path here. They don't have to have the answer when the offseason begins, but they need to know which direction they're going to go.
Right.
It looks to me like the Cardinals are basically admitting that they're going to have to do something middle infield wise. To me, their interest in Trevor Story at the trade deadline kind of tipped their hand a little bit. They're gauging the market for an addition there, and it makes sense because if you look at position ranks and OPS, they're getting killed in offense in the middle infield. Second base and shortstop offense are killing them this season. We spent all this time talking about the outfield. They finally got the outfield they wanted. Those guys have played pretty well together. It's shortstop and second that are way down the list in terms of offense provided to this team. We went from talking about Tommy Edman. How is he going to find enough bats? They can't let him get lost on the bench. Well, he's got – up until about last night, he had the most at-bats of any player in the majors. And I like Tommy Edman as a player. But, you know, you don't want Tommy Edman to be dueling, some of the best players in baseball for the most at-bats. He's been overexposed. He's leading the Cardinals and was for a long time at innings played at multiple positions. He's also been thrust into the leadoff spot despite an on-base percentage that's slumped. He's been asked to do too much. So can they make an addition that gets him to that super utility role? the bigger question is, do they ship DeJong out, or do they say, hey, we still believe in Paul. We don't want to trade him when his value is at its lowest. Maybe make him a second baseman, or get a power, you know, offense plus second baseman, and let him stay at shortstop where his defense has been pretty good. And then you let him be the, you know, seven hitter that has really low expectations. And who knows, he might pop off for a 30 home run season as your seven hole hitter, like he did when he first came up. But I don't think they can expect him to all of a sudden be this cornerstone bat like they hoped he would be when they gave him the extension. And I think that the rest of their season is really boiling down to, can they get something from DeJong that suggests that they can fix him? Because if they can't, then I think they're going to have to make a tough call there. And I don't know why it happened, Dan. It's a strange thing. You know, he was really locked in. He had big power. His defense has been rock solid, but it just seems like he's lost the thread, and it doesn't seem to be moving in the right direction either at the plate.
I would agree. I would say the same thing for Lane Thomas. Now, there was more of a track record, obviously, with DeJong, but Lane kind of the same thing, and they've just lost their way a little bit. And it's not to say they can't get back, because Paulie's got it there. I've seen it, and I saw a two-week stretch recently. He had it. It's there. It just got to be consistent. A few other things before I let you go. And, well, one other baseball question, too. Lester and Happ, trade deadline came and went. Cardinals didn't do much. Obviously, you get Lester, you get Happ, guys on the backside. What did you think about that?
Well, I mean, not thrilling additions. Those guys have accomplished a ton. They're at the point where you don't expect a lot, and we haven't seen a lot from them in their first shots at it here. The Cardinals, I think, were making the move for a couple of reasons. One, they were able to protect Johan Oviedo and Woodford, who are getting kind of rocked around a little bit, and it protects their confidence, allows them to get a little more seasoning, which is probably good. And it also, you know, the staff has been so unreliable and so reluctant to be able to give quality starts that maybe if those guys do benefit from a change of scenery, then you get them for a low cost. Two guys who were kind of at dead ends in their time with the Cardinals, and Gant and Thomas, traded out along with a minor leaguer. And maybe, you know, you something good sparks from having a bunch of veteran guys who know pitching in a rotation together. And I can see why they tried. I thought it was a little underwhelming. My biggest complaint, and I wrote about this, was that the help didn't come sooner. And I know the Cardinals can say, hey, look at how few pitchers moved this season before the deadline. How were we supposed to get it? Fair argument. They can say, look at the prices paid for some of the better pitchers, and we didn't want to give up our top prospects. Another fair argument. However, every year there's a team that beats the market. Every year there's a team that goes out and makes a trade before, you know, before everyone else starts. Someone has to be first every year. And unfortunately, the Cardinals couldn't find a way to do that. And I think if they would have, either when Miles Michaelis gets hurt at spring training, or especially when Jack Flaherty goes down, then they might have been in a better spot to make, you know, more competitive deadline. Because I don't blame them for not going for broke at the deadline. They have like a 3% chance of making the playoffs, and that's not what you do. But if they would have maybe found some creative ways, or some potentially painful ways to get some starting help earlier, they might have been in a spot to make more aggressive deadline moves. That was my only complaint. Not about the guys they added, but just about how it got there.
Hey, Ben, I got to wonder, this weekend, a little bittersweet for me, and maybe for you and for other fans of the St. Louis Rams. So you're going to see Isaac Bruce get his just due. He's going into the Hall of Fame, which is wonderful. And he should be in there. And I was covering games back in the day. So I was the stringer, Ben. So we're doing a podcast here. I don't have to be like really official with my stuff. So I was a stringer back in the day. And that was one of my jobs early in my career. And I had CBS, ESPN, UPI, AP, all these different radio stations. I'm the guy running around getting all the sound. I was hustling.
Sure.
So when they had Tony Banks under center, and Tony Banks looked for one guy every play that they were going to throw, you could have put Jerry Rice in his prime out there, and he wasn't looking at him. He was looking at Isaac Bruce every single time. And, I mean, this guy is going over the middle. He's going deep. He's doing everything. He is the ultimate St. Louis Ram. So of all the guys that have gone in, which I love to see, and it puts St. Louis on a platform in the NFL, I think this is the guy. Now, I'm saying I'm bittersweet because I have to wonder if this is the last connection that St. Louis will have to the NFL in terms of players going to Canton. Now, Torrey Holt's going to have a shot. And, yeah, you know, wide receivers get looked at differently with getting in, and you got to really make their case. So he may have to be patient. But I got to wonder if this is it. So I'm kind of bittersweet, but I'm really excited for the Rev to go in because he's just an awesome dude and still has a hand in our community. And like I said, I think he's the ultimate Ram.
Well said. And I do think Holt will get in. I hope he does. It might have to wait a little while. But I know that the numbers for Torrey are pretty dang good too. Isaac, it took longer than it should have. I think a lot of that was kind of this, you know, that team was so good. I think there is some reluctancy to put them all in, even though they belong. They change the way the game is played on top of the numbers they put up. And there's also, I think, a real bias toward communities that don't have teams anymore. You know, Howard Balzer deserves a lot of credit for continuing to advocate for Isaac. He'll do the same for Torrey, but it's harder. It's uphill sledding when you don't have a team. It's very political. But finally, they did the right thing and got Isaac in, so I'm hoping they'll do the right thing and get Torrey in. What I love about Isaac, and what doesn't get talked about enough, you know, all the numbers, he's there. The fact, there's two things that I think probably don't get talked about enough with Isaac. One is that what would some of those numbers have been if he wasn't playing with Torrey Holt, if he wasn't playing with Marshall Faulk? I mean, that was a dynamic offense.
Good point.
That, you know, a lot of these receivers who have been in the Hall of Fame, they've been one trick ponies. They've been the only guy on their team that's a playmaker. And that's great for their teams because that's great for their numbers because they get all the numbers, but their teams don't do all that much in terms of wins and in terms of, you know, championships. And I think Isaac was not only a great Hall of Fame worthy receiver, he was a great teammate. He wasn't a prima donna. He wasn't a diva. He wasn't saying, throw me the ball, I got to get my numbers. He was doing whatever it took to make the team better. And then the other thing is, you know, they talk about this, they probably don't put enough emphasis on his legacy and impact on the game. To this day, Dan, when receiving coaches teach how to run routes, they show guys footage of Isaac Bruce. I mean, he was the example of how to run every route perfectly. You know, you could have a quarterback who was good enough, drop back and say, throw it to the five route. And he could do it with his eyes closed and Isaac would be there. He had everything perfectly planned and he practiced it hard. And his preparation and his meticulousness and his attention to detail, all of those little things that added up to make his talent that much better. I think he's a walking encyclopedia on how to be a receiver. And I think that maybe didn't get talked about quite enough in terms of what he brought to the game, how he helped some other guys along, both in his leadership, but also just in his example and how it's taught. So those are things that I hope get, you know, celebrated as he goes in. And then here locally, it's got to be about his commitment to being a part of this community, to investing in it, to maintaining a connection even after the team left, and perhaps even more after the team left. You know, it was Isaac who got together the legend at the Dome game because he hated the idea of the last memory of the Dome for the Rams being the last game, which was so sour and so bitter. He said, no, let's end it on a high note. Let's go get some of the guys together and we'll do something for charity. His camps that he puts on every summer here that are absolutely free. And he comes from Florida and he teaches the camps. He's here all the time doing galas and giving away scholarships. And he has a scholarship program that gives kids the money to travel to their campus if they get a scholarship, because that's something that a lot of people don't think about. Okay, you got a scholarship, you get to go to this school, but how are you going to get there? And if you have no money, how can you travel there? How can you buy a plane ticket? He helps take care of these things because that's what he went through when he was going to college. I have enjoyed getting to cover him. I didn't cover him as a player. I've watched him as a player growing up. I mean, if you would have told me as a kid that I got to go interview Isaac Bruce one day, I would have pinched myself. The first time I ever called him, I called him and I was nervous and I said, "Hey, Mr. Bruce, this is Ben Fredrickson. I hope it's okay. I called you. I got your contact information from Jim Thomas. I hope it's okay. I called." And he said, "It's not." And he hung up. And I thought, oh my God, he'll never talk to me again. But that's Isaac, and since then we've had great talks, and his sense of humor is hilarious, super dry. I mean, he could be a stand-up comedian, but, you know, he is this gracious, kind, really fantastic person, and his love for St. Louis and the fact that he feels it back, it's pretty special, and I'm thrilled for him. I hope folks get a chance to to see his speech. And I know for some people here, it's not fun to watch the whole event because it's a lot of Jerry Jones and, you know, it makes you feel icky about the league. But I do think he'll have some gold nuggets planted in there for St. Louis Rams fans. And he wants it to be a celebration of St. Louis. So that will be sure. And it's cool that Jim Thomas, I'm happy Jim Thomas is there to cover it for the Post-Dispatch because he obviously covered every Rams game and knows Isaac better than anybody. So, yeah, it's a pretty cool weekend for that.
Hey, I got to ask you. So he hung up on you. Did you call back or do you remind him of it? Was he really mad? What happened? You let me hang
it. I have reminded him of it since then. I did not call him back immediately for that time. We circled back on something later and I brought it up and he just laughed. Kind of like, you know, like I guess he was calling my bluff and I'm sure maybe he was thinking I would call him back, but I didn't at the time. And now we laugh about it. Also, if you ever get the chance to ask, Jeremy Rutherford has a great Isaac Bruce story too. I won't tell it on his
behalf.
About
his jersey?
Yeah.
He told it on the air the other day with me on 101. But go ahead, you can tell the story.
Only because he's recently shared it. I won't want to steal his story, but Jeremy swears that they were in studio once and Isaac walked in and he said, "Hey, Isaac, great to meet you. I got your jersey." And Isaac looked at him and said, "Must be tight." Great sense of humor. Awesome. And I think that he has he's enjoyed the softer, lighter side of commentary and interviews more since he's been done playing. But that's a lot of guys. But what a cool thing to get to talk to him. And, man, I can remember, you know, growing up in Sedalia, my dad had a friend who lived outside of St. Louis. We'd come and go to games. And I got those yellow noodles, you know, that you'd wave in the stands. And, you know, I got an autograph from Grant Winstrom at a high school football game once and kept that shirt for years and years, man. And that was my introduction to the Rams. So to be able to even have Isaac's number in my cell phone is like one of those things that I stumble by and go, man, that's pretty cool.
Absolutely.
I don't need it. I could retire tomorrow and think that's pretty cool.
He is all class and it's going to be neat to see him go in. I'm going to wrap it up with this. So we have football here locally in terms of the colleges. And I know we have a lot of people that follow Illinois that listen to us on Fridays, and they always say, I always get it. I don't know if you get it. I'll get emails and texts and things of that nature or Twitter, and we post on Instagram and Facebook, and they're saying, hey, you never talk about the Illini enough. So Brett Bielema, starting his first year, Illini, they're on the field. Second year, Eli Drinkwitz. Just in a general sense, I'm excited for both programs. How about for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm curious to see what the, you know, Brett Bielema brand of football looks like at Illinois. I would be crazy if I was going to sit here and tell us, you know, anything about these teams based off of like their first 4 days of stretching and running around doing calisthenics. I always like that, you know, takeaways from camp. And it's like, well, no one got injured today while stretching. And that's about it. But his brand, and I think he'll be a better fit in terms of what he wants to do at Illinois back in the Big Ten. I'm curious to see what kind of style he can put out there. I think he wants to play, you know, a modern version of smash mouth football where he prioritizes his big guys in the trenches, and that can work. So I'm curious to see if he's able to get kind of his fingerprints on that and style of play this year. At Mizzou, I don't have a ton of questions about the offense. I'm curious to see what some of these new receivers, how they impact the offense. How much does Eli Drinkwitz kind of open it up for Connor Bazelak? But my biggest thing at Mizzou is going to be the defense. Coach Wilkes has been in the NFL for a really long time, and some guys make that transition easier than others. And what will this defense look like, specifically their defensive line? When Missouri's been at its best, it's been able to get pressure on quarterbacks, cause havoc in the backfield. They're trying to do that again this year. They've got a deep and versatile pool of defensive linemen with experience. The COVID year helped them, oddly enough, because some of those guys came back. And can they use that as a strength? Because if they can, then the defense should be pretty decent this year, I think.
My man, what are you working on this weekend for the Post-Dispatch?
Lots of Cardinals coverage. I'll be at the ballpark, and Dave Matter's cranking out coverage from camp in Columbia, and JT's in Canton covering Isaac. So there should be plenty of good stuff going on. Maybe we'll get a Vladimir Tarasenko trade or something. The clock is ticking there, but whatever happens, we'll have it covered at STLtoday.com.
Awesome. That is Ben Fredrickson. Thanks, Ben. Have a great week, and I'll see you at the ballpark this weekend, I'm sure.
Sounds good, man. Talk to you soon.
You got it. Ben Fredrickson, and this is brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group. We do this every Friday with Ben Fredrickson. A reminder, shameless plug here, on Sunday night, I have a look at Ted Simmons. Now, this is on Fox 2, 10:30, Scoops with Danny Mac, the television show. And my guests will include, well, you're going to see the Ted Simmons statue dedication in its entirety in terms of his speech, because I don't think enough people saw it. It was short, sweet, but man, it was poignant. So I'm going to play that. You're also going to hear from Al Hrabowski on Ted Simmons, his great friend and teammate, on what those teams are like with Teddy. And now a guy from that era and that team getting his just due. We're talking about Isaac Bruce. Well, it's been way too long for Ted Simmons. So Al Hrabowski would be my guest. And also Bernie Miklas, who writes daily here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. And if you didn't know, you can subscribe to Bernie's columns. They are free. They'll drop right to your email, your inbox. And Bernie's going to talk about covering and being around Isaac Bruce and what it was like to be around him and what he means to the city, what it means for Rams fans in St. Louis. And maybe this is the last guy that goes in to Canton. So all that is coming up on Sunday night. We're brought to you by Blue Tail Medical Group, and we'll talk to you next week with Ben Fredrickson on Ben Fred Fridays.